Hi, everyone. This is John Frank, editorial director of PL Buyer, welcoming you to this latest PL Buyer podcast. This podcast is one in a series we're doing with Patrick Rodmel, president and CEO of Watt International, a Toronto-based integrated retail agency with more than 40 years of experience in more than 40 countries. Patrick also is a guest columnist with PL Buyer and will be co-chairing our new Best of Design Excellence Awards later this year, recognizing the best in private label package design. Today we'll be discussing Patrick's 10 keys to private brand success, the topic of his columns he's been writing for PL Buyer this year. Hi, Patrick. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, John. Nice to be here.
Let's begin by setting the scene for our listeners. Give us the thinking that led to your 10 keys. What can our readers and our listeners here learn from them?
Well, John, I guess looking at the sort of the scope or the context for the 10 keys, it really is a project of about 30 years in the making. Looking back on the history of our business, all the way back to the days of President's Choice, working on the President's Choice and no-name programs for Loblaws, really helped us kind of define a course, if you will, of working with a number of retailers on their private brand programs, both strategically and then, of course, creatively. Mm-hmm. Over that time, I guess there's been over 100 retailers we've worked with, and frankly, we've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly of all of this, and really also seen the diverse approaches that people can take to defining their programs, all the way from shooting from the hip to what some might call analysis paralysis. So what I'm hoping people can learn, I guess, John, is a framework for effective decision-making. I'm not here to sort of paint the ultimate picture or the one way that private label should be done, but really set up a framework for people to work from when defining the future and success of their private brand programs. That's what I hope they can get out of the 10 keys.
Great. Well, I'm sure they will, and they are if they've been listening to these and reading your columns in the magazine. Today we're focusing on key number 3, effective pricing strategy. As the headline on your column in our March issue says for this column, retailers often leave money on the table by pricing their private labels too low. I'm sure that's a topic our listeners want to hear more about. Tell us how and why that happens.
Well, John, I'm sure you're familiar with the old consumer adage, you get what you pay for, right? And in many cases, we have found that consumers, when they see something that's priced too low, it connotates an image of poor quality. That is to say that how can something that's half the price of, say, a Tide or Tylenol work as well as those products? So quite often it's the perception of something being so cheap that there's no way that it can work or meet the expectations of quality that's there. When the truth is, really, that retailers believe they need that big price differences to drive trial of products. And while that's true in many product categories, there's also a lot of them that more attention to the quality perception and things like, you know, quality guarantees and, frankly, in-store sampling is what's really missing to drive that trial. So you can't always buy your way to trial is what we say.
No, and no one wants to be thought of as buying cheap products, right? No.
That's exactly right. It's all about the value equation, John.
You touch on the fact that consumers don't price compare one private label line with another. That's an interesting concept. Can you talk a little bit about that and talk about how it fits into the pricing decision for a retailer?
Well, yeah, that observation really comes from a lot of the consumer research that we've been doing, frankly, on behalf of our clients, where, of course, you know, these studies have shown that shoppers do compare national brand prices to other national brands, that is to say, from one retailer to another through things like the flyer. You know, you get the flyers out on the table and how much is tied at one retailer versus the other. And frankly, they also compare national brand prices to the private label when they're in the stores. That is to say, you get to the shelf and you take a look and say, here's one alternative, the private label, what's the difference there? But they don't make price comparisons between private label to private label, that is to say, the private label offering of one retailer to that of another, which we found very interesting and can really help retailers understand that, you know, the context for the competition of private label really happens in the store.
So retailers shouldn't be looking at what their competitors are charging for their private label, but focusing on the national brands more?
Well, I think it's not, certainly it's not, I mean, being aware of pricing strategies from your competitors is always important, but what we've just simply what we found is that consumers can't tell you what the price difference is from one private label offering of the same product in the other. And really, when we look, you know, sort of lift the hood, if you will, and try to understand the rationale behind that, it's that consumers don't equate the quality of private label to private label, so they don't make that price comparison. So, you know, Tide is Tide no matter where you buy it.
Right.
But a private label detergent from one to the other, they don't really necessarily equate the quality perception of a private label to another private label. And that's really the sort of the foundations for, if you can't compare the quality, how can you compare the price?
That's a great point. You also mentioned that in some categories, private label sales can actually increase as private label price gets closer to the leading national brand. That almost seems counterintuitive. Anyone who studied economics knows about supply and demand curves, and demand is supposed to go down as price goes up. But you're saying not here. Explain that. How can that be?
Well, it's obviously that's not a universal statement, but it, but we have found it was an interesting study. About 8 years ago, we took a look. We were doing work in private label in Scandinavia, in fact, where private label really doesn't have the same kind of penetration levels as it does in, say, Europe or the United States or even in Canada. So when we're taking a look at that, the big differences in penetration numbers, we took a look at some of the categories, and particularly in the over-the-counter and household goods products. And what we saw that there was a huge price difference between the private label and the national brands. And then what was interesting was, as we suggested some, if you will, upward price pressure on the private label alternative, the volume sales actually went up. And the idea being that it's all about the trust in quality, especially in categories where efficacy, with things like OTC and household goods, is really the primary benefit of the thing, that the function of the product is core to the purchase decision. So it was an interesting study. So you can really, in especially in efficacy categories, you can get yourself up on the margin, or get your pricing up, so long as the consumer gets the impression of the right quality.
Okay. So again, this is a category by category consideration. You can't. This is not a blanket statement across all categories.
I don't think so. No, it isn't, John. You know, things like where taste is key, you know, or where there's a, you know, some key drivers that's, you know, there are categories that have a few different aspects to the purchase drivers of the category that say, hey, we can't just simply get ourselves, you know, knocking on the ceiling of the national brand pricing strategy. So, it's more when there's efficacy categories as opposed to taste categories. We found that's where that pricing opportunity might lie.
Okay, great. Well, that's a great distinction for our listeners to be aware of. You talk about some key questions for a retailer to ask in the pricing process. Let's review those here. The first, is there a dominant national brand in the category? Why is that important?
Well, there's, you know, this. I only need to say one word and you kind of get the sense of it, and that's Heinz. You know, the ketchup, ketchup category has been one that's kind of been the, you know, it's the final frontier for private label with the dominance of Heinz in the category. And so if you look at the ketchup category, it's always been tougher. Historically, certainly, it's been tough for private label to break because Heinz has so much trust in the consumer's mindset. Again, you'll note that taste is the primary driver within that category. So it's a tough one to be, you know, making what I'll call price creep or lessening the gap between the national and the private brand. So where there's a dominant brand, it can become tough to induce trial of a private brand. So pricing sometimes has to help get the consumer to stretch to give it a try. So that's why understanding is there a dominant national player is one of the factors that we look at in terms of helping support pricing strategy.
I see. I was just at a party Saturday where they had ketchup in a small squeeze bottle, and when I tasted it, I knew it wasn't Heinz. So,
absolutely.
And I knew it wasn't even good private label, because I've had private label ketchup that tastes very close to Heinz. So.
Absolutely. You know, I'm sure they didn't have the package on the table.
No, not at all. As I said, they had sort of a little picnic kit, a little red bottle with a squeeze top with the ketchup in it.
They couldn't trick you.
No, they couldn't fool me. Food is my life, so.
good.
The next question you ask, is the primary consumer benefit in the category of a functional nature? What do you mean by that, and why is that important?
Well, sorry, it gets back to that efficacy question, and, mm-hmm. and things like, you know, aluminum foil or paper towel or aspirin, these are all product categories that it's really the primary driver is it going to work for me, mm-hmm. right? Is this product going to deliver on the functional attributes? So aluminum foil, is it tough enough? Paper towel, absorbent enough? Aspirin, is it going to cure my headache? So we're, that functional nature within those categories, we really, you know, that's what helps drive the purchase decision. So it's here that we really encourage a focus on the quality image of the product, because if we can induce trial, there's a good chance you can keep the consumer loyal to the private label offering. Mm-hmm. In other words, the image in those categories is even more important to say, hey, if I see the national brand in the private label, does the quality image of the private label convince me that it'll work? Because if you can then deliver on the quality of the product, you can have that person as a loyal consumer to the private label on an ongoing basis.
And how does that relate to the pricing decision? Do you have a smaller price gap within a functional category, a larger price gap, or
Well, no, it does. But you know, like one thing that we might suggest to someone is, discount. You know, put your private label on sale at a key time. Let's say if you're talking aluminum foil, you talk about the summer season and people going out for barbecues, mm-hmm. And more outdoor living, you know, find a moment in time that that the product has, you know, a higher buying propensity, put it on discount, get them to try, and then you can probably, after you've had it at a, 38% off or 50% off, next time they come back to the shelf, they'll say, hey, it delivered, and by the way, it's 15% less than the national brand, as opposed to having it on an everyday low price of 35% below. Mm-hmm. So we'd say promote, gain trial, and then you've probably got some room to stretch your pricing up a bit in that category, so long as the quality of the product delivers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know. Do you see retailers promoting private label enough to gain trial? This is a bit off your primary topic, but do you see that going on?
You could almost, John, draw a direct correlation between those businesses that promote their private label more aggressively and those that have more, successful businesses, both from a profitability standpoint and from a brand equity point of view. You know, businesses like, Publix and Wegmans and HEB and even Loblaws here in Canada, all businesses that if you take a look at their flyers, their advertising, their circulars, have a more dominant promotion of their private label than their competitors. Mm-hmm. And so generally speaking, we'd say that there's a lot of room in there. It's always a question of where the money comes from, John. Mm-hmm. And that's the issue is, you know, there's no slush fund for promoting private label. Private mm-hmm. label, VPs of private label have to fight tooth and nail for every dollar they can, but so I think it's really an executive decision that they need to have that commitment to the promotion of private label, put the money behind it, mm-hmm. and watch the effects at the cash register.
All right. Their national brand promotion money is coming from the national brands, correct?
Yeah, that's exactly. And, you know, every time they put a private label, we often encourage our clients to talk to their suppliers. And, you know, in the same way that a CPG company might, invest in the marketing of their brands through the retailer, mm-hmm. why not start to create private label funds through the private label suppliers? After all, they're the ones who are going to benefit as much as the retailer from increased sales of their categories.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, that's something I think is an untapped source of revenue that needs to be discovered by many retailers.
Yeah, that's a great point. It sounds like the topic for another podcast as well. Maybe we can get some suppliers on and talk to them about that.
That'd be a great idea. Sure,
Getting back to your column, you also ask, does the retailer brand have positive equity in the category? Elaborate on how that comes into play in pricing.
Yeah, well, I guess the best example I can give you is, take a retailer that may have a, dominant position in its marketplace in fresh. Let's say that, through brand equity studies, they find that they do have that dominant fresh position in the marketplace. You get back to where we started, John, you get what you pay for. And if you have that quality perception in fresh, chances are that you can probably have a little room to, you know, capture a little more margin on your private label products that are particularly tied to that fresh proposition. Mm-hmm. If you're known for the quality and you deliver the quality, there'll be room to grow in that. And that's why understanding where the positive equity is really important. You know, I'd suggest strong drugstore businesses should think about if they have equity in, you know, the OTC and HABA categories, probably opportunities to, when they put their name on it, to, you know, capture a little more margin by building on the trust they already have and the positive equity in those categories.
Well, those were categories last year where we saw a lot of national brand recalls that seemed to have benefited the private brands immensely.
Absolutely, John. You know, that's it's all about, you know, it's all about quality, the image of quality, and the transfer of positive brand equity. You want your the halo of your retail business, the equity you have there, to leverage it into your private label program, and frankly, it should go vice versa. Again, I think if anyone wants to look at a business that's done an exceptional job of that, you know, Loblaws with their President's Choice brand, there's probably no better retailer at, you know, squeezing the positive equity out of their private brand program than Loblaws. Really a best-in-breed retailer in that regard.
Okay, great. Well, we're a bit out of time here, so I'm going to have to thank you, Patrick, for joining us today. And let me thank our listeners and invite them to listen to all of our PL Buyer podcasts with Patrick and other industry leaders by visiting our website, privatelabelbuyer.com, where you can listen to and download all of these podcasts. We'll be continuing this series with Patrick. Look for them on our website. Thanks very much, Patrick, and goodbye.